This is Y Nada Más, a Real Madrid Podcast.
Right, what is going on? Would it be, would it do, would it be like, guys? It is another episode of Y Nada Más, a Real Madrid podcast. I am your host, Eric Rivera, and of course, it is a time for celebration. It is a time to rejoice. It is a time to be happy. It is a time to once again celebrate another El Clásico win by Real Madrid. They obviously, I'm doing this podcast during the week. We did win El Clásico in the Supercopa España, which is not actually played in Spain. The Super Cup of Spain, which is not actually played in Spain. It's played in Riyadh. It's played in Saudi Arabia. No disrespect to anybody from Saudi Arabia, but I do think it's a ridiculous thing that you play a Spanish Super Cup outside of Spain. But we all know why it happens. You know, we all know why it happens. It's all for money. It's all for the sport and so many people that were fighting against the Superliga. And I was one of them at first. And everyone was protecting it about being, you know, everybody was saying, oh, we got to protect football because football is about the fans and da, da 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 da. And then we see things like this. And then you're like, well, why was everybody against the Super League? Why was I against the Super League? You can go back and listen to that podcast. It was really about it being a closed competition. I don't want it to be a closed competition. But if they modify that, everything else for me, Florentino cannot go wrong and let him do what he wants to do and create the Super League. But anyway, it was played in Riyadh. It was played in Saudi Arabia. Real Madrid won the game. We did what we had to do. It was a rough, scary, scary game. I can tell you guys that it was not a fun game to watch from the Madridista perspective. It was worrisome. I got worried. I think a lot of Madridistas got worried. But here's the thing. I think a lot of us went into that game thinking we were not a lot of us. I think too much was said in the Madrid media, in the Spanish media. And then, of course, a lot of Madridistas were going into that game, I think, very, very confident, but overconfident is the word that I would use. There was a lot of talk about smashing them, about destroying them, about putting, you know, una manita, 5-0, 6-0, dropping, you know, as much as we possibly could on their heads. And the thing is, you know, as much as Barcelona is in a rough spot right now, it is still, I think, you know, you still have to think it is Barcelona. They do have, let's be real, they do have quality youth players that are coming up that I do think will be pretty solid players in the future. But, you know, this, you know, I do have things to say about them, you know, claiming the moral victory and all that stuff after the fact. I don't think that's something that you can do after losing a game. And I'll go into and I'll explain a little bit more about that. And then, you know, them trying to sell it right now, you know, especially Laporta selling it to the players, which I think is a bad look too, you know, trying to sell it to the players, because honestly, if you look at the faces of the players, they're like, number one, they're like, what the heck is he talking about? Because I think he was speaking Catalan, and I know a lot of the players don't speak Catalan. So it was, you know, I'm pretty sure they were all looking at him, well, what's that about? But at the same time, you can't take away the competitiveness of players. And no matter what you try to sell them of it being some sort of moral victory and we're back and whatnot, they still lost a game. They still lost a semifinal game, and they still lost a game against their most bitter, I would say hated rival in the world. There is no team that they dislike more than Real Madrid. So for them, it was, they can try to sell it off. Culés can try to sell it off or brush it off as a as a or try to sell it like a moral victory, and that, you know, they did a good job, and that they, and Xavi comes out and he dominated the game. But it's, let's be real, at the end of the day, you lost the game. And as nerve-wracking as it was for Madrid, there are a couple things that I could say about that I want to say about that victory. But anyway, so this is the, you know, welcome to the Nada Más podcast. I am your host, Eric Rivera, again. You know, just want to say, hey, guys, if you are on, if you are listening to it right now, if you're listening to the podcast right now, remember that we are on YouTube as well. So check out the video version of the podcast on YouTube at Y Nada Más. So search Y Nada Más podcast on YouTube. If you guys, let's say you don't listen to, let's say you don't watch too much YouTube, guys, but you have a YouTube account. Listen, guys, do me a huge favor. Do us a huge favor here at the podcast. Go to YouTube. Go look up Y Nada Más. Look up our podcast page. Please hit the subscribe button. If you want to be notified of any, if you like to watch the podcast as opposed to listen to it, you know, maybe you're working on your computer and you have it in the background, whatever, you know, if that is, if you do frequent YouTube and you haven't hit subscribe, please do that. And then if you want to get notified, you can hit the notification button, which will notify you anytime a new podcast comes out. But listen, the reason I'm saying please subscribe is, yes, obviously that helps us grow and all this kind of stuff. But really right now, I'm just trying to get to 100 subscribers because of the fact that getting to 100 subscribers helps us get that vanity URL so we can have that, you know, a unique URL where it says like Y Nada Más podcast and it isn't a string of numbers. That way it's easier for me to link and all that kind of stuff to it. And it just makes everything easier for us. All right. That's all I'm asking. Listen, I'm not asking, you know, give me 5,000 likes or whatnot. You know, that'll come in time if we continue putting out content that you guys enjoy. So, you know, I am in no rush, but definitely want to get to 100 subscribers. So help us out there. Listen, correction from something I said on the last podcast. So there's a podcast that has been supporting me, and they are also a Real Madrid podcast. I met these guys, or one of the guys, through the Real Madrid Reddit. If you guys aren't down on the Real Madrid Reddit, you know, read it. I definitely read it from sometimes. I see different opinions that's going on in the Real Madrid Reddit. I think it's a great spot. So I advertised my podcast there. A lot of guys came out and subscribed and, you know, wished me luck. So that was pretty cool. And anyway, they have there's a group of guys on there that have their own podcast as well. I said it the last time I gave it a shout out. I think it was, I said it was called Keeping It Real. It's called Let's Be Real, or Let's Be Real. So it's Let's Be Real. That's the podcast they have. Check them out. Guys, support them as well. I think all of us podcasters that have to do with Real Madrid in English have to support each other, because there aren't that many of us. I mean, they're obviously, Managing Madrid is the big one. I'm another one of them. There's the Madridista Roundabout podcast, which I've been on their podcast as well. You guys invited me on one, I think, during the holiday season, guys. If you are listening or if you catch this, sorry, that was during the holiday season, so I couldn't come on, but let's do it again. And then in addition to that, there's this podcast as well, which is Let's Be Real. So you can check out all of those, and, you know, you get different points of view. And also, I think one of the guys from Twitter that I follow, I forgot his name, man. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing it. But anyway, he's a journalist out of England. And he has the Real Pod. I think it's the Real Pod or something like that. That's another good one too. He's on Patreon. So anyway, those are all the guys. Shout out to all those guys. Shout out to all of you guys for listening. And remember, we are, of course, on social media, Y Nada Más Podcast on Twitter, which is where I am most active, Y Nada Más Podcast on Facebook, and then our Instagram is YNM Podcast, where we're just sharing graphics and stuff that we come up with that you guys can, I don't know, use as, you know, we might do some wallpapers and stuff like that, because I know some of you guys like to put those on your phone and stuff, so we might do that too. Listen, if you want to write for the Y Nada Más podcast, if you want to write for our website, it is, check us out or send me an email at info@ynadamas.net. That is our website. ynadamas.net is our website. Our good friend Trombach is writing there. I have a couple guys that asked to write. So hopefully that comes through, and we're trying to put more content everywhere. So anyway, let's go back to the game. Obviously, we want to celebrate that game. So it was, you know, it's a win. It's a win over Barcelona, right? We have to celebrate it. So let's throw out the confetti here. You know, the video. You got to celebrate it. You know, it's epic. It's always a great win. I mean, even when it's a team, even when it's a Barcelona that isn't playing well, it's always good to beat your bitter rivals, guys. I mean, that is an important thing. But so let's go to the game because, you know, I want to keep this podcast short. It's really one that I wanted to do yesterday during right after the game. But, you know, I'm the type of guy that when I'm watching a game, emotions run high. I'm ready to like to talk trash and banter. And I don't really want to come off that way. I do wish Barcelona was, you know, falls down just to laugh for a little bit that they go down into like Segunda B or whatever. But at the end of the day, you know, at the end of the day, it is football and I try to be as gracious as we possibly can. But anyway, I like to see the fans that talk so much trash hurting, you know, and that goes like for the guys that are like, what is it like? There's a couple of Twitter guys like Mr. Satan, Jota Jodi, the guy from ESPN, Moisés Llorens, like all these guys, like I'm happy when I see them suffer. Cristóbal Soria, of course, all these guys, you know, that say a lot of things. And then, of course, seeing like the ridiculous reactions from like Mundo Deportivo, Sport, you know, all of those Barcelona related periodicals, which is crazy to me that, you know, it's funny to me that in Spain, you don't see that anywhere else. I think, you know, if you look at professional sports here in the United States, you know, none of the, like, you know, it's not like it's crazy. I think it's because it's, you know, we're, you know, the United States is a much larger country, obviously, than Spain, in terms of size. And then you have so many cities, but it's strange to me to see, like, you know, even if you are, let's say, you know, even if you are, I don't know, even if like, let's say ESPN was based in Miami, right? And I think it would be completely insane to have, even if ESPN was based in Miami, to have ESPN, which is a sports network, show bias towards the Miami Heat or the Miami Dolphins or Inter Miami, let's say, when it comes to the MLS, to football, or to the Florida Panthers, you know, all the teams that are from the Miami area. It would be insane to see that, you know. But the crazy thing, and you don't see that with NBA, you don't see like ESPN, just like the pundits that are on there, the talking heads that are on there, the people that are making commentary, those guys can show, I think, bias to certain teams because maybe, you know, some of the guys might be have played on those teams, have friends that are on those teams, come from those cities, you know, so you can see that some of the talking heads might have bias. But the strange thing to me is like having like outlets like Sport or Mundo Deportivo that are from Barcelona that you would think would be periodicals that are essentially, I guess, you know, supposed to be neutral, showing complete bias towards just one team in particular, which is Barcelona, you know? And I think, obviously there's a political reason for that because of the fact that it's on that, you know, it's in Catalonia, which has an issue, political issue with, you know, wanting to, you know, in some ways, in many ways, many people, there are groups of people that want to be independent from Spain. So it's strange to me. But and then it's also strange on the other side is too that, like, even though Madrid is a huge team, you know, one of the biggest teams in Europe and everything, to have, let's say, I don't know if and I don't necessarily think Marca or AS are pro Real Madrid. But, you know, I would say I see them being a little bit more, I don't know. Marca, I think, Marca has, from what Florentino has said in the past, Marca does have, I guess, to see some sort of anti-Madrid bias, maybe because they just don't like him. But, you know, there's a lot of talk in Spain that somebody's either anti-Madridista or pro-Barcelona. But there's just other teams in Spain. So it's insane to me that, like, there's this push-pull between these two teams because they're the two top teams, I guess, and then Europe is small, so it's very different than the States. But the fact that there's that bias from these periodicals and newspapers is crazy to me. So seeing something like on the cover, like I put this on my Twitter, on the cover of, to see on the cover of Sport, you know, a headline that has nothing to do with Real Madrid, although Real Madrid won the game. It's just completely political bias to say, or just completely biased to have, like, pay no attention, obviously, to Real Madrid having won the game and essentially say Barcelona, just to favor Barcelona and say, we are back, or they are back is what I think it said. The translation in Spanish would be, they are back. And it's insane to me to say that after the game when you've lost the game. To say you're back when you've lost the game. Sure, listen, guys, they had a good performance. They had all of us Madridistas sweating. But let me tell you something. Me, if I'm trying to be as neutral as possible here, and I'm still going to have bias as because I'm a Madridista, but to say that they absolutely dominated the game and made us sweat, really, I think, to me, it's more about the performance that Madrid put in than it is the performance that Barcelona put in. Barcelona had a good performance, but they had a good performance based on the fact that Real Madrid let them back into the game multiple times. If we look at the game, Barcelona never had the lead, never got the lead. Real Madrid went up first with the goal from Vinicius. And then there is a ricochet goal, and you know that comes off of De Jong, Luke De Jong, and it goes in, and that's the 1-1, right? That's the goal that ties up the game. Then Real Madrid once again goes up on the scoreline to go 2-1 with a goal by Karim Benzema, and then it is a defensive mistake, a defensive error by Militao. And the Real Madrid defense to let Ansu Fati, of all people, a guy who is not tall and a guy who is not known for heading the ball, to be wide open and in the position that he was in order to score a goal for Barcelona. So that puts it at 2-2. Both of the times we let them back into the game. If we look at throughout the game, I mean, I have the stats up here and I can look at it. I mean, yes, ball possession, they possess the ball more than us. And that seems to be, like, to me, that's what bothers me about Xavi so much. And I've disliked, and to be honest with you, and to be completely transparent, is I've disliked Xavi since he was at Barcelona. I always felt, you know, he always made excuses. He always, when he lost, I felt like he was always an arrogant dude. You know, out of those two, the Xavi and Iniesta crew, I will always 100% go with an Iniesta. I always liked Iniesta's attitude. I always liked him. I liked him as a player when he was on the Spanish national team. But Xavi, man, I can't with him. And him as a Barcelona coach is even worse. He's just this never wanting to admit your faults, never wanting to admit, essentially, you know, it's always this, you know, we dominated, we looked better. There's not a team that's better than us. And to say that would be, you could possibly say that if you were showing interesting things on the pitch and winning games, but you're still losing or tying games against teams that you should, well, let's say drawing games against teams that you shouldn't be drawing against. You're celebrating wins against team that you shouldn't be celebrating wins against. You know, that you wouldn't fervently celebrate a win against in the past, you know, so it's almost like they've fallen so hard that now you're celebrating these small victories against teams that really in the past would have given you no problems whatsoever. And then celebrating, which is the hilarious thing, is celebrating the moral victory. Okay. I don't think there are moral victories in sports, except for, and this is my bias again, there are moral victories in fighting sports, because you could lose a fight, but you could, like, bang up the other guy so bad and the fight is so close and both guys are so bloodied up, but somebody just inches the other guy out by just a little bit, that both of the guys, both of the crowd is, like, on their feet. And even if you lost the fight, you know, you're bloodied and bruised, but you're still considered like a legend. Like that was a legendary fight. We've seen fights like that. If you guys follow boxing, if you guys follow MMA, where there's fights where two guys are going at it, you know, and in the past, you know, and this is my boxing and or sort of my combat sports, you know, heart in, you know, in this. But, you know, if you look at the old school fights of Marvelous Marvin Hagler and against Tommy Hearns and you know, you look at the, you know, the fights such as you know, oh God, what is this guy? It's not on the top of my head. Oh, Arturo Gatti and Mickey Ward. You look at these fights, you know, those fights are legendary because they were like both falling apart and almost falling over towards the end of the fight, and but they're still going at it, you know. So in those kind of ways, moral victories exist there. But in sports, where the scoreline is the ultimate determining factor, I don't think there are moral victories when there's a scoreline that is an ultimate determining factor. Whether it's in the NFL and you got touchdowns, and whether it's in the NBA and you've scored points because you made more shots, you sunk more shots into the basket, you've gotten more runs in baseball, and you've gotten more goals in football. At the end of the day, the scoreline, what people will remember, and this is the thing that bothers me a lot about, I think stats are good, all the stats with expected goals and possession and who got the better passes and who had more shots on goal, who had more shots on target, all of that stuff is really, really nice, guys, right after the game. But years down the line, people are going to remember who won that game. Very few people are going to go back into looking up the stats of the game to remember who dominated possession, who outshot the other team, who had more passes, who had more key passes, who was more accurate. At the end of the day, down the line, history, what history remembers is the scoreline. Is the scoreline, you know? Which is why sometimes it bothers me, like, when we don't look, when there's such a weird thing with, like, the Ballon d'Or and picking the players. It's weird to me that, you know, who scored the most goals. It's like, oh, no, it's not about who scored the most goals. Okay, I get that. But then you have to be very clear in what the criteria is. Because to say who's the best footballer in the world, you have to take into account that there are many positions, and not all of those positions are about scoring goals, you know? which is why it's like, if the Ballon d'Or, like the reason, you know, I dislike the whole thing with Messi and Lewandowski is, if you're going to give out a best striker award and then give out a best overall overall player award, there has to be some sort of criteria, because then you have to be giving out, essentially, if you're going to give out a best striker award, you got to give out best midfielder, you got to give out best defender, all that kind of stuff, right? But anyway, what I'm talking about here is stats. People don't remember the stats. People aren't going to remember the stats down the line. So whatever moral victory Barcelona is trying to sell itself after this win, at the end of the day, Real Madrid was who won the game. And as bad as I feel we played and how much, not, I wouldn't say, see, there's a lot of people saying that we played absolutely terribly. I don't think we played terrible. I think what happened is we had players that, like Militao, who unfortunately picked the wrong game, and Trambach said this in his most recent article, picked the worst game to possibly have his worst showing. Militao had that. Carvajal didn't look good as well, which is another stance to reason why, you know, the whole Carvajal issue stands to once again shows that we need to have another right back. Not somebody who can occasionally fill the position like Lucas Vazquez, but we need to have a true and true right back, because Carvajal is getting older. He's injured a lot. And then when he's coming back from injury, as much as Ancelotti tries to manage his minutes, essentially what we're seeing is that by managing his minutes, he's also taking away time for him to game time away from him to be able to get used to the game, right? for him to be able to get those minutes and get comfortable again and get in the rhythm of the game again. So, you know, Ancelotti chose to bring on Carvajal in a game where, or chose to bring, to manage his minutes and bring him in a game and have him sort of get back up to speed in a game against Barcelona, which no matter what happens, guys, no matter what happens in football and no matter the form that we are in when, no matter the form that the team is in, when these two teams match up with each other, they're always going to be difficult games, especially when it's a one-off game like this one, because, you know, it's not over two legs. Anything can happen in one game. You know, we've seen that in one game, you know, a Getafe can beat you, an Elche can beat you, a Cadiz can beat you. We've seen that happen. So in one-off games, you can never take these guys like Barcelona lightly. I think it was a mistake to think that we were just going to run over them. And if we were going to run over them, then they would have to play not the way they've been playing lately. A lot of us, I think, on Twitter, and a lot of you Madridistas on there on Twitter that I've read, a lot of people have that same feeling, which is every time Madrid scores, it's like they take their foot off the gas and sit back. And it's kind of like, we're now going to manage the game after we've gone up on the scoreline. It's not, we want to drill, we want to drill, we want to drill, we want to drill, we want to keep on scoring. So they were, the problem is you can't be content to do that. I just don't, you know, 1-0 is a dangerous scoreline because it's really, you're really only two goals away from losing the game. You're one goal away from it being tied and once again putting, firing up the other team because they can take the lead, you know. You need to, you know, it's much more difficult to go, you know, once you're up two goals or three goals, you know, that's why when teams go up 3-0, a lot of people are like, okay, it's pretty much done because the team can manage. Then you can sit back and manage the game because it's going to be really difficult. Maybe you'll concede one. At the worst, if you're not doing a good job, you'll concede two. And if you're really doing a terrible job at managing the game, you'll concede three and they'll tie it up 3-3. But you know, the reality is once you go up 3-0, it's going to be, if you manage the game well and your defense is doing their job and your midfield is doing their job, you're going to be able to manage that game and see it out until the end, which is why 3-0 is kind of like, a lot of people are like, okay, it's over, right? But to try and manage the game at 1-0, especially, it's not like we have this wall of a defense as of late that we used to have, you know, when you had Sergio Ramos, when you had Varane, and they were in their best form, in the form of their life, and you had Carvajal in good form, and you had Marcelo in good form, where you had this back line that was in many ways impenetrable, and then you also had a Casemiro that was on fire, and a younger Luka Modric, and a younger Toni Kroos, which was almost like you had this wall that was very difficult to score on. You know, if you want to play that old Serie A style of Catenaccio, you know, which is, you know, you go one up and then you just completely shut down defensively and it's impossible to just get through you guys because the defenders are, you know, are all Maldini and Nesta and Baresi, you know. Okay, then I think you can sit back after a 1-0, but it's still always a very, very difficult, or I would say risky, thing to do, and we're doing it consistently. Now, once again, I ask, is it, I've asked it before, I wonder if it's by design, but it does feel like it's by design because everybody seems to shut down. You know, the whole team seems to shut down and just kind of like, and then you see the disconnect where it's like Karim Benzema is dropping back and Vinicius is waiting for a ball to come to him, but he's kind of like out there in no man's land. And then you're just kind of, and then, you know, you're sitting back and you're waiting. Once again, we were playing that strategy of waiting to counterattack, which makes sense when they threw their men forward, but it doesn't make sense when you are, you know, trying to, I think, manage a lead against a team that's full of youngsters and they're super hungry and they have nothing to lose. Like, they want to prove that they're back, and they, you know, Barcelona came into this game much hungrier to win the game than Real Madrid came to win the game. Real Madrid came in as, it looked to me, as a team that came in to manage a result, score a goal and manage the result. And the problem is the defense wasn't up to snuff to do it. I think Nacho had a good game, but he wasn't Alaba. I thought Mendy was fantastic, although he, you know, obviously he gave us a lot of heart attacks. You know, the whole thing of him doing the Zidane roulette and doing that in the area is absolute genius if it works out. If he would have gotten the ball taken away from him and scored on, he would have been like the enemy number one. But the fact that it kind of is always that fine line. There's always a fine line in football where you can go from being an absolute genius, like, oh my God, how did he do that? And what a maniac and what an absolute animal, to what an asshole. You know, there's a fine line between those two things, you know? So the fact that it came out and he was able to get out of that position and work his way out with that dribble, get out of the pressure, was fantastic. But if it had failed, he would have been an absolute moron for doing it, right? But he did. So in the end, it goes down in the history books as what a play, right? It's the same thing too with Vinicius. People are like asking, you know, when the pass came for Rodrigo for the goal that ultimately gave us the win from Fede Valverde, why did Vinicius dummy the ball? Did he see Benzema? Probably. Did he see Valverde coming? I don't know. I mean, Valverde was running, and I thought it was going to be, obviously, I thought Vinicius was going to take it. And then when he dummied it, I was like, okay, Benzema's going to take it. And then all of a sudden you see Valverde swoop in there and take that shot. And that's how they got the goal. But you imagine if he would have dummied it and it gone nowhere, you know, and it just would have gone through, and everybody would be like, why didn't he take the shot? You know, and it would have ended up costing us the game or going to penalties. Then everybody would be like, what was he doing? But at this point in the season that Vinicius is having, I think it's fantastic. He did a great job, you know? So in the end, guys, I really feel that Culés, as much as they want to think of it as a moral victory, I don't think there are moral victories. I don't think there are moral victories in football. I don't think there are moral victories in basketball. I don't think there are moral victories in any kind of sport where there is a score line, where there is a legit score line and you're competing against somebody else. There isn't one, you know, because the score line is always going to read who won at the end of the day. You know, that's why I go back to fighting as something that is one of the few sports where you can score moral victories, because even though people will remember who ultimately won the fight, a lot of people will remember the fight as how exciting and crazy it was that two guys were beating the shit out of each other for 12 rounds, if you're talking about boxing, or 5 rounds if you're talking about MMA, or 5 rounds if you're talking about Muay Thai. People are going to remember the fight. The blood, the punches, the knockdowns, whatever, right? But in football, people aren't going to remember as much the match, or they may remember the match or it being a good match, but they're not going to remember the stats. So this type of stuff where Xavi goes, oh, we dominated possession, and they had 53% ball possession to 47% possession. You're not talking a very lopsided possession stat to be gloating over, you know? You know, if anything, yeah, they had more passes, which you would expect from Barcelona. What did you bring up here in the stats? You know, the big chances that they created, they were in favor of Madrid. The big chances that were missed were in favor of Madrid, meaning that we missed more important chances. We had more times where we could have scored. There were the goal that Rodrigo missed there at the end to absolutely put away the game. Multiple times in the first half where Asensio took a shot on goal. I think it was Modric took a shot on goal. Or Benzema took a shot on goal. The one where Benzema hit the woodwork. You know, there are more multiple times where the score, Real Madrid could have put the game away much earlier and much earlier than was it they did. They did, you know. The counterattacks were 5 by Real Madrid, 0 by Barcelona, because they play a possession game. They don't play a counterattacking game. So they just wanted to be inside. But even so, from their shots inside the box, were 14 shots inside the box. But if you look at the total shots they had, were 20. 11 of those were off target. And then if you look at 6 of them being on target, if you're looking at the shots on target, Real Madrid had more shots on target. And then at the end, had more shots eventually go in as well. So it does know you. I mean, for me, those stats, these stats of like ball possession, and I don't have the expected goal stats here. So if anybody wants to chime in later on and talk about that. But at the end of the day, it seems like definitely Madrid had the upper hand in the efficiency of it. So, and it's kind of what I saw on the field. It seemed like Barcelona had the ball. They were trying to get in. They were pressuring. They were doing more things. And Real Madrid was much more relaxed, moving the ball around the field when they needed to, and then attacking when they needed to. And when they wanted to attack, especially in the first half, it was 1, 2, 3 passes, and they were already in a position where they could cause a threat to Barcelona. You know, yes, the Vinicius dependencia in a way is something that I don't want to always see, where it's like, yeah, let's just lob a ball over the defense or lob a ball over the midfield and hope that Vinicius beats his man and, you know, ends up taking the ball and scoring, you know, and that was essentially what this game was a lot about. But I think it was really a good strategy at the end, because you had a Dani Alves who is 38 years old. I think his experience, he could beat Vinicius in experience, but he would never beat him with speed. And that's essentially what was causing Barcelona a lot of headaches, was Vinicius doing that. Araujo had a good game despite the fact that he was hurting in trying to keep Vinicius at bay. But to me, it was awesome to see them, you know, to me, it was awesome that in a way, to, if that was a strategy and it was working, it's kind of like, if it's not broke, don't fix it. That's what they wanted to do, and Vinicius was there for that opportunity. The counterattacking was there for that opportunity. And the game honestly changed. So the game changed in two different things for me, two different times for me. When Modric was removed, and sometimes I don't know how these score, like SofaScore and some of these sites that do these ratings. I think ratings are so subjective. I mean, I don't know the math behind it. Whether you're just looking at the eye test and giving this guy a 7 or giving this guy an 8 or whatever, I think they're pretty subjective. But to me, Modric had a much better game, had a better game than some of these, you know, stat aggregators are giving him. I think it was a better game from him than it was a game from Kroos. I think Kroos had a really quiet game for what he usually does. He was not one of the... I think so. I think if you really look at the, for me, if you look at the overall season of both our two, you know, midfield maestros in the sense of Kroos and Modric, because, you know, Casemiro's more of a defensive midfielder. If you look at the stats of them, I think my Modric has been far more consistent. I think we've seen Kroos have two. About, I think right now I could think off the top of my head, he's had two games where he was meh, you know, the Getafe one and this one. And it, could that be tired? Is he tired? Is that what is setting in? Is it tiredness? Is it them trying to just, because at the end of the day, you know, they knew that if they won this game, then they would have to play again on Sunday, of course, in the final, and it would be a difficult game no matter who they faced. And now we know it's Athletic Bilbao. But, I think that's important to remember too. You know, it was going to be difficult regardless. And so they kind of felt like, let's try to manage our output. And at the end of the day though, it didn't, I don't think it played well, you know, trying to manage the game and, you know, go score a goal and then manage the lead, then score a goal again once you get tied on, once you get the draw, once the other team got a draw, and then manage it again only to lose the lead again. At the end of the day, didn't work out for Real Madrid, because we ended up having to go and play 120 minutes with players that are more prone to being exhausted because they've been playing a lot of minutes. The likes of Luka Modric, obviously he didn't play 120 minutes though, but it made a big difference at first. When they first took him out of the game, it made a difference when he was out of the game. I think we lost somebody. I think we lost that he was much more active defensively and doing, making some good plays in interceptions and block shots and taking the ball away from players, as like making tackles. I think he was doing a better job than Kudos was. Yeah, he blocked two shots. You know, he won five. He won one ground duel. I don't know if, I mean, it doesn't seem like that's true to me, because I think he dispossessed somebody. I think it was either Pedri or somebody that was coming on sort of a breakaway, and then Modric came through and got it. So seems, well, it seems like Kroos made more tackles, made more interceptions, but he was dribbled past more. He lost more. Well, he didn't lose as much possession either. He won more ground duels. Okay, so if you look at the stats, maybe Toni Kroos, but he just seemed like he had more of a quiet game. You know, he made one key pass. Both of them made a key pass. You know, well, Modric made more attempted dribbles and had his long balls. He had 100% accuracy with his long balls. So anyway, so they were very neck and neck, but I felt like Modric was playing a little bit better there, and taking him off kind of gave us a little bit of an issue there. But then, honestly, Carvajal didn't have a good game. So when we brought on Lucas Vázquez, I thought Lucas Vázquez had a good game. And I think that, you know, if you look at Militao, I think Militao, he lost possession 12 times, which is kind of insane for a central defender to lose possession that many times. But it's also, he was the one that was progressing the ball more so than Nacho, I think. But anyway, he just didn't have a good game. I mean, you have a stat here, which is errors that led to a goal. Essentially, you had one of those. So he just did not have a good game. And then, you know, the star players, of course, were Benzema. Benzema was on fire. I mean, that guy played 120 minutes, and although he looked like he was absolutely exhausted by the end of the game, he looked exhausted, he looked tired, but he was still in the game. He was still making runs. I mean, Benzema is an absolute beast. He's such a legend, you know. He's such a legend, and he had a great performance in that game alongside Vinicius. And then once again, it's our trouble on the right wing is Asensio didn't have a good game. I thought Rodrigo had a great game. And this is the problem with Asensio. In our second half, I think we definitely suffered with the likes of Carvajal, with the likes of Militao, you know, with the likes of Asensio. You know, it was more important to have, you know, once we bought on Rodrigo, once we bought on Lucas Vázquez, Camavinga and Fede Valverde injected pace. You know, once those players started getting into the game, we started picking up again and started getting more from our players and started seeing more results. And then once Barcelona was throwing everything at just trying to attack and just trying to attack, and we played on the counter, there were so many counterattacking options that were just, you know, Camavinga's counterattack where he could have scored and instead he made a pass that went out of bounds. The one-on-one, you know, or the pretty much wide open shot that Rodrigo had that he missed completely. There were a lot of options for us to score. So to me, there wasn't a clear dominance by Barcelona at all for them to kind of be singing about that. Basically saying, you know, it was such a great game for us, because here, for me, once again, here's what I'll say at the end of the day is Barcelona played probably one of the best games they've had this season. And Madrid probably played, I wouldn't say it was the worst performance we had this season, but it was the more subdued performance we've had. So you had a Barcelona playing their hearts out against a Madrid that was, once again, trying to maybe manage, not lose. Not really wanting to win, but they didn't want to lose, you know? So there's a very different, those are two different scenarios, you know? Wanting to win a game and then just not wanting to, like, playing not to lose are two different, very different, different attitudes. And Barcelona definitely was playing to win. And you could see that even if they're throwing the kitchen sink at Real Madrid, they weren't able to defeat a team that was playing pretty lackluster. So at the end of the day, that's what I take away from it as a Madridista, that it was more us. It's the same way in La Liga. It's our La Liga to lose. This was Real Madrid's game. From the beginning, it seemed more like it was Real Madrid's game to lose rather than it was Barcelona's game to win and take it away from them. So, you know, that's what I look at and that's what I see. So I don't see where there was dominance. I don't see where they say, oh, you know, we played better. We were better than Madrid. You know, all they had was this, as, you know, Xavi likes to say is, oh, you know, all they just scored more than we did, but we dominated possession. At the end of the day, there's no moral victories in this game. And then, you know, seeing Laporta going back, I mean, that's my thoughts about this game. You know, it was, and, you know, and going back to the right wing, one thing I just wanted to say before I go, the right wing position, I think that's going to be an issue. But Asensio just continues to do the same thing that we've seen him do all season, which is sometimes he's good. So one game he's good, then he's bad for a couple games, then he disappears for a couple games, then one game he's good, and then he disappears. You know, I honestly prefer Rodrigo in that position. And really, he's just a stopgap, because I think if we do get Mbappe, it'd be interesting to see how we're going to end up playing him and where we're going to end up playing him. Because is he going to play on the right wing and then Vinicius on the left wing and Benzema on the center? Is that how it's going to go? Because I think you can put Mbappe anywhere on the pitch and he's going to and have maybe Vinicius and Mbappe and Benzema switching positions consistently throughout the game. I think really you can have that opportunity to do that with that. But I think Rodrigo and Asensio, for me, Rodrigo wins that battle when he's fit and when he's doing well. Asensio is just too inconsistent for me. He's too inconsistent for me. Having him good one game and then gone for four isn't what you want to see, you know? He does, and I think somebody else put it one time too on Twitter, I saw it, he does far better when he comes on as a substitute than he does when he starts out. The same thing with Lucas Vázquez. But I would say, you know, two guys that I love the way they play, regardless of when they play. And I like the passion that they put into the game. I don't want them as starters, but I like the passion that they put into the game when they come on, are definitely guys like Nacho and definitely guys like Lucas Vázquez. I've given Lucas Vázquez so much shit in the past, and I know a lot of people do, but he is definitely a squad player. He is definitely somebody, you don't want him to start the game, but I like what he does when he comes on the pitch. You know, he is a solid, solid backup and utility player. Both of them are. And for that, I do like them. Asensio, to me, is, he's occasionally good. That's what it is. And for me, that, you know, I don't want to hate on him because I loved him. There were times where I remember posting one time on my Facebook where this guy is the future. And I just don't see that anymore. And of course, if Mbappe comes, you know, I feel worse for Rodrigo. If Mbappe comes, then I do for Asensio, you know. I think even, you know, I mean, and then, you know, going to other players that I kind of disliked in the past or disliked recently, I think Isco is also performing really well when he's played, you know. So that's my thoughts about everything. I don't think Barcelona should be, you know, saying, you know, it was a moral victory. Yeah, of course, they could be happy about it and whatnot. But at the end of the day, we're the ones who advanced. We're the ones who won the game. We're the ones who are in the final. They are not. And that's just the reality of the situation, guys. You know? Anyway, with that said, ladies and gentlemen, like I said, this was going to be a quicker podcast. So thank you very much for listening. That is this episode of the podcast. Please, once again, if you are listening to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, leave a comment, leave a rating. That helps us rise up in the ranks there. Listen to us anywhere you would like to. When with audio, we are on Spotify, we are on Stitcher, we are on TuneIn, we are on the iHeartRadio app, which is here in the United States. And also, of course, if you are listening and you want to check us out, you want to check out the video version, check us out on YouTube. Look up Y Nada Más Podcast. That's where we are. Please hit the subscribe button and help us rise up in the ranks there and get to that vanity URL. If you want to write for us, check out info@ynadamas.net. That's where you can write to us And that's about it, guys, man. Thank you very much for listening once again to this episode. And I will talk to you guys again after. I don't like to say those types of things after we win the Supercopa. After we play Athletic Bilbao on Sunday, I will join you. I will release another podcast and we'll go from there. Thank you guys once again for listening. I appreciate the support. Love everybody that listens to the show. Love all of you guys that are Madridistas, whatever your opinion may be. Thank you very much, and I'll talk to you again soon.
This has been Y Nada Más, Al Real Madrid Podcast.